You may have noticed the readings that we are offering in worship are not the same as the readings listed on the front of your bulletin. In light of events this week, I shifted gears a little bit with our worship on Thursday, and I want to commend Jason and Emily because they were able to respond very well, and I appreciate that. But I will do that from time to time if I think that there's a different direction we need to go. I will sometimes leave the lectionary, so that's why the scriptures don't match up. Our gospel reading this morning is the passage of Jesus storming the sea, and I will share with you that one of my favorite banners that Margie has made depicts Jesus and the disciples in the boat, and Jesus has his arm raised, calming the seas, and there's just so much energy and emotion in that banner, and I think of it whenever we read this passage. On that day, when evening had come, Jesus said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. Other boats were with him. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. But Jesus was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Jesus woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased and there was a dead calm. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this, that even the wind and sea obey him?" The word of the Lord. I have no answers for Holly, Jack, Brooks, or Lizette, for Anna, Liam, or Colin, or their families and friends. I have no answers for those of you who've received a devastating diagnosis from your doctor, for those of you who've discovered the one you love someone else more, for those of you dealing with any of the legions of soul-consuming tragedies in life. I have no answers for you or your families and friends, no words or wisdom other than life is just hard sometimes. We are as fragile as we are resilient. I have no answers. I can share my thoughts. I can tell you what I tell myself to get through times such as these. I understand the science of why our frail bodies succumb to forces beyond our control. But I can't tell you what God is thinking, why God would let these tragedies happen. Any of my attempts to explain to Holly and Anna why their husbands are only with them in spirit, any of my words to help Jack, Brooks, Lizette, Liam, or Colin understand why their fathers were taken from them in a time of their lives when they need them most, any of my words would be of little consolation. My only hope is to bear witness. I have no answers. In these devastating seasons of life, we have to find our own answers. The words we need to hear, the reasons we need to grasp to keep moving forward. What I can offer is hope. We are not on this journey alone. We aren't alone as we seek understanding, assurance, comfort, and peace, even answers as elusive as they may be. A great cloud of witnesses surrounds us, people who love us dearly, family, friends, neighbors, co-workers, teachers, our beloved church. They're the ones who assure us by being there, with kind words, comforting meals, reverent silence, and compassionate acts, sharing our tears and our joy, our heartbreak and our hope. They're the ones who give us reason to hold fast to this precious gift of life. They're the ones who surround us with the love of God. They're the ones who offer us the peace of Christ. They give us the reason to live another day. They help us find the grace in suffering. Is there any redemption in suffering? This is the question Mark Iaconelli asks his friend James, the director of restorative justice on the island of Guernsey. Is there any redemption in suffering? James responds with a story of grace. A young widow's husband is killed when an accountant reaches for his cell phone and loses control of his car. A tragic accident. The young widow enters the room, sits across from the man who killed her husband and the father of her son, and says, "I want to tell you about my husband." With deep pain in his eyes, the accountant listens. He listens as the woman tells the story of her husband's life, who he was, how he was loved, what he meant to her and her son. At times, the widow is overwhelmed with grief and breaks into tears. Each time this happens, the accountant weeps along with her. "They tell me you want to kill yourself." The man looks at the woman with red-rimmed eyes. "Is that true?" the widow asks. In a quiet but steady voice, he answers, "Yes, it's true." The woman sits and searches the man's face, his eyes. Then she stands, walks over, clasps her hands on his shoulders, pulls him up to his feet, and embraces him. She holds the man who killed her husband and whispers into his ear, "There's been enough dying. I want you to live." James answers Mark's question. You want to know what suffering can make possible in a person? Grace, compassion, forgiveness. Every human being has this ability to love and forgive. I have witnessed people who have suffered violence, people raised by abusive parents, people who live in the most oppressive social conditions, people without education or resources. I've watched these people suddenly embody this mysterious capacity to care, to love, to forgive. You have to know that's possible in people. You have to know that possibility waits within each of our sufferings to be healers, to be healed. Beloved, this is the peace of Christ, the peace we have to offer amidst the many and sundry storms of life. The storm rages all around them. The winds and the waves beat the boat. The raging water swamps the boat. Their fear is real. Their question is valid. Jesus sleeps on a cushion in the boat. Does he not care? They will die. I don't know. The disciples are looking for Jesus to save them from this storm. When he does, we say, see, if our faith is strong enough, God will save us too. Too often we take it a step further. If God protects the faithful from harm, then those who suffer or face persecution must be lacking in faith. They must be to blame for their plight. If only they had more faith, God would save them too, we often hear. But what of so many heroes and heroines of the faith? Peter and Paul, John the Baptist, the countless unnamed women martyrs in the early church, even Jesus. Did they lack faith? Did God not care they were perishing? Why did God not save them from the storm? I don't know. Bad things happen to good people. Life isn't fair. Some people are always getting kicked in the face. Others enjoy smooth sailing. I know many folks see this as the way the world is and have a hard time believing in the goodness of God. They hear Christians proclaim, just believe. God will protect you. God will bless you. God will make you prosper. But then life happens. And the lie is exposed. Life isn't fair. Good people suffer. Faithful people die. Sometimes the storm prevails. When Jesus awakes, he rebukes the wind and sea. The peace he enjoyed on the cushion during the storm was now shared by all. The storm has ended. Had the story ended here, we might have made the case for the belief God protects the faithful. Jesus certainly saves the disciples in the boat. But the story doesn't end here. Jesus rebukes the disciples as he rebuked the wind and the waves. Why? The storm rages all around. The winds and the waves beat the boat. The raging water swamps the boat. Their fear is real. Their question is valid. Jesus sleeps on a cushion in the boat. Does he not care? They will die. Yes. Jesus cares for the disciples. He fed them. He taught them. He fought for them. He protected them. He gave his life for them. He loved them. But the storm could only take their lives. Jesus reveals this hard truth over and again. There are things in this world worse than death. In Matthew, early in the disciples' ministry, Jesus cautions them not to fear those who are persecuting them. Do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Instead, they are to magnify Jesus' ministry, proclaiming his teachings from the rooftops. Jesus' point on the Sea of Galilee is similar. Do not fear. Trust in God, come what may. The life Jesus offers, the life of faith, is greater even than death. So it's not that Jesus doesn't care about the disciples, whether they live or die. It's that the life Jesus offers, a life greater than death, can't be lived in fear. This life, the kingdom life, can only be lived by faith. The faith of Jesus, the faith that triumphs over death. Mark leaves us with the disciples asking yet another question. Who then is this that even the wind and sea obey him? Who is this that commands the creative power of God? Who is this Jesus? Everyone else seems to know the answer. Demons recognize Jesus as the Holy One of God. Gentile women, Roman centurions, hungry crowds, people in need of healing. Even Jesus' opponents acknowledge his power, though they try to connect him to Beelzebub. Those closest to Jesus, the disciples, seem to be the most confused. Could it be they are that dense? Or is Mark's question directed at us? Could Mark be asking us, who do we say Jesus is? Yes. That question appears throughout Mark's gospel. Remember, Mark's the one who leaves us with the empty tomb, not the risen Lord. We're left to decide, was Jesus raised from the dead or not? Who is this that even the wind and sea obey him? We're left to decide. These are questions of faith. Who do we say that Jesus is? Who has the last word? Life or death? Is Jesus just a great teacher? Maybe even a prophet of God, faithful unto death? If so, then life is tragic. All that is good, loving, as real as it may be, amounts to little. Death has the final word. If Jesus is only a good man, faith, Christ's faith, leads us to believe there is more to the story. God raised Jesus from the dead. Jesus' calming of the storm reflects God's creative power and anticipates God's triumph over death. Herein lies our hope. The ultimate power of love to bring life from death. Beloved, it's this hope we have to offer. Hope in the power of love which offers us life even in the face of death. Having started teaching his disciples about the kingdom of God and the healing power of love, Jesus says, "Let's go across to the other side, to the land of the Gentiles." This isn't a passing comment. Mark includes it because we see this life-giving love of God isn't limited by family relations or religious traditions, race, gender identity, or nationality. Everyone who loves God and neighbor is welcomed into the family of God. Having shown us that Christ commands the creative power of God, and having invited us to embrace the life of love born in the faith of Jesus Christ, Mark proceeds to show us this faith that leads to life. We see the radical hospitality of Jesus changing lives, bringing hope. When we make this life our own, we discover who this is that commands the wind and sea, and we become the people God created us to be. Beloved, this is why we're here, to share this hope. Not a spiritualized hope that denies the harsh realities of life. Not a naive hope that believes tragic things don't happen to people who love God. No, ours is a courageous hope. A hope that lives life to its fullest even in the face of death. A hope born in the faith of Jesus Christ, the faith by which he commands the creative power of God to calm the storms, bring life from death, and make all things new. The faith that tells us nothing in this world, not even death, will separate us from the love of God. The faith that triumphs over death. The faith that leads to life. Beloved, this is the peace of Christ. The peace we have to share. Thanks be to God.